Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast. This is JD Duran, and today I am with
Matthew Mason.
And our usual cohort, Nate Parsons, could not be here today as he is watching his Michigan State Spartans in East Lansing, so he will not be with us. Our good friend who joined us last week, Matt Lee, was actually supposed to be here with us this week, but at a last-second logistics issue, he could not make it. So it'll just be Matthew and I this week, so we still have a lot of fun on today's show. We are going to be reviewing Oz, the Great and Powerful, which we saw this weekend. We're going to be discussing potential new Bond directors, as Sam Mendes is not going to be directing the next one. And then we're going to be finishing off the show with some news and some movies we've seen this week. So, a pretty easy show. So, we'll jump right into it. And, Matthew, you did the review on the website for Oz the Great and Powerful. So, why don't you kick things off and let us know what you thought?
It was an honor to review this film because I realized I hadn't gotten to vent about a film I didn't like in quite a while, given that it was Oscar season. Yeah. And most of those I enjoyed. Oz, not so much. I'll start off with, there were some things I did really like about the film. I loved that it does open in not just black and white, but full frame. Yeah. It was actually, I think, technically one of the best choices that Sam Raimi made for the film to start it that way. Because it already puts you in feeling like you're in an older film. I mean, it's set in the 1900s at the beginning, and you know, it really just immerses you. And that the whole black and white feel does not feel forced or cheesy. It actually feels like a legitimate black and white film, just with happen to have modern day actors. Mm-hmm. James Franco actually leads out really well, creating a very likable but flawed character of Oscar Riggs, I think is the character's name.
Yeah.
And who, you know, dubbed Oz. He's actually quite a compelling protagonist, and you look at his predicament, and he strives to be so much more than what he is, and you feel for him. However, the film quickly gets away from itself. It transitions to Oz after the tornado sequence and goes both to widescreen and color, and then the landscape and performances utterly eclipse any story or character development that could have been had past that point. The Franco's performance kind of goes, I don't know if it goes off the deep end, but it just, it's like he didn't matter in the story after that. He was just a device in the plot to move things forward. And then you have Mila Kunis, which I'm going to go ahead and do say spoiler alert here. She is the Wicked Witch. I'm sorry if you couldn't figure that out from the posters. You need to watch more movies.
And, that's a good point.
But she was, you know, a fairly humanistic and believable portrayal of Theodora when she's the good witch. But when she turns to the bad witch, or the wicked witch, she is, oh my gosh, utterly...
It's a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I found myself whispering inappropriate things underneath my breath while watching her as the wicked witch. She also looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, where you'd look at, I mean, a typical Sam Raimi film, a la The Evil Dead, Drag Me to Hell, or even the Spider-Man films, they always have a really high, like, well, like, good-looking production value to them.
Yeah.
This one, sure, it looked good, but there was zero, there's kind of zero heart behind it. I mean, it's weird to say The Evil Dead had heart behind it, but the whole goal of The Evil Dead 2 was to make an audience laugh, and it actually worked really well. You look at Oz, and it's like, what is it doing? It's just like, here, Disney threw billions of dollars at me. I'm sorry, millions of dollars at me, and I'm going to use that to the best of my extent make flying baboons that scare the crap out of me. You know, other than that, it's like this: the land eclipses what could have been actually decent performances from a lot of the actors, or even like I said, the makeup of Mila Kunis is just any performance she might have had there is utterly eclipsed. This was my impression overall, was just that the special effects, once they got to Oz, ruined what could have potentially been a great story with great characters.
Sure. And we'll get to that more here in a second. One thing that I wanted to touch on was going back to the performances. I disagree a little bit that I liked Franco throughout the film. I thought he brought a nice comedic element to it. I thought he was pretty good. I really liked how he kind of came through in the kind of final act of that movie and how, you know, he really helped the people of Oz. I thought he was great in that role. I thought he was a great fit. And I liked some of the supporting cast in here. I liked Michelle Williams in this movie. I thought she was fine. I don't think she necessarily brought... She wasn't necessarily a standout character, but she wasn't bad by any means. I liked Zach Braff as the little monkey that can fly. Finley, I believe, is his name. You know, Bill Cobbs as the Master Tinker. You know, he brought a nice touch, even though he's not in the film a ton. You know, I liked some of the supporting cast. Joey King as the China Doll. Even though it's just voice acting, I thought she was fine, and I enjoyed that. But Rachel Wise, I wasn't really too keen on, and like you said, Mila Kunis in this, it's bad. Like, it's embarrassingly bad. Like, I felt embarrassed for her as I'm watching this movie.
Yeah, it was... Mila Kunis is actually an actress who's proven she's... I mean, she started, you know, on That 70s Show back in the 90s, and was never one, like, could believe, oh, she's done that, she's done Family Guy.
Yeah.
Like, but then she really proved herself in Black Swan a couple years back. Oh, wow, this gal is a high-caliber actress. And just, I don't think anyone knew that. And so it's like,
yeah,
you know what she's capable of. And then she gave us The Wicked Witch, which I don't... And the thing is, I can't feel that it was her or Rachel Weisz or any of the actors' faults, really, for this. I think they were just fed a really poorly knit-together script. And also, like I said, it wasn't even that the performances and all, in at least a lot of the other supporting cast that you named, was bad. It's just, once again, they were eclipsed by everything else going on in the story, so that I wasn't even paying attention to them. It was, oh, look at that thing there in the background, or, you know, just...
It could be a very distracting background. I mean, obviously, a lot of it is all CGI, so, and it's very colorful, and it just has that kind of Alice in Wonderland type feel to it a little bit, which can be very distracting. I thought the performances for the most part were okay. I almost had to look away when she was on screen, though, as the Wicked Witch, though. It was bad. I mean, I just, there's really no else to say other than it was horrible.
I wanted to call attention to, you talk about Alice in Wonderland. I've heard so many people draw parallels between the new Alice in Wonderland and the new version of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which Tim Burton helmed, because it has that same weird, colorful, really bright and squishy kind of look to it. And actually, it didn't feel like either of those films to me at all. I can understand why people drew those parallels. I drew them too from trailers. But once, like, I'm not even a huge Tim Burton fan, but those are two films I felt he had a good handle on. And once again, like, the heart was really understood behind those films. The story was tight. The casting was really well done in both of those. Alice in Wonderland, not so much, but it, like, in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, it was actually really great. But it's kind of like, this felt like a progression kind of down that line of, like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, sure, it had the look, but the look didn't overcome.
Yeah.
Alice in Wonderland, it was a little overcome by a lot of what was going on and really overtaken by Johnny Depp's performance in the film.
Yeah.
But then this one is like, well, it was all about what was going on as the look of the film and nothing about the story or characters or anything like that.
Going back to, you know, you were talking about the visual effects a little bit. Some of it was very distracting, and the landscape of it, I mean, it's very in your face. But one thing that I really did like about it was I loved the CGI on the China girl. I thought was really well done. I really enjoyed that. I mean, it really came across as very realistic, and especially with the way that she interacts with Oz and James Franco in the film was it was really well done. I thought it was terrific. And the flying monkeys I thought was a lot better than the old ones. And our good friend Matt Lee, who couldn't be here, wanted me to let you all know that he was scared out of his mind with those flying monkeys, and he enjoyed those quite a bit as well.
Yeah, I've been terrified of the flying monkey since I was two or three from the old one. And this didn't do anything to help that around. Yeah. I have to say, like, it's not that I like them, but yes, they were well done. Like, they were actually legitimately creepy. Where the Wicked Witch in the old one is actually supremely scary, and she's not one bit in this film.
Sure.
But as far as, like, say, Finley, the nice flying primate, whatever he is, all dignified and such, he was just cartoonish. And I mean, I know that's kind of what they were going for. So I mean, they accomplished what they were going for. I'm just saying, to me, it didn't fit the Land of Oz that I had constructed in my mind.
It seemed like it was more comedic elements than anything is what it felt like with that character. And it was,
it's Zach Braff. So, I mean, it makes sense why they would expect of him to play the sidekick comedic role. Yeah.
And which I thought he did a great job. I liked him a lot.
Once again, I just think everything was just eclipsed by the look of the film.
And speaking of our good friend Matt Lee, here's Matt Lee's thoughts on Oz the Great and Powerful.
Hey guys, this is Matt with In Session Films. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Oz because I'm not going to be able to make it to the podcast this week. Basically, I just want to kind of go over some things with you guys, let you all in on what I thought about the movie. Overall, I mean, I thought it was a fantastic movie. Immediately, as soon as it opened up, it was in standard frame, which was kind of cool and interesting. And it was in black and white, a lot like how they did the old one. So it gave it a feel of starting off just like the old one. They even used some backdrops kind of like the old one did in it. So it definitely gave it a feel of, you know, like it was straight out of, you know, the 1930s, 1940s, like somewhere in that era. But as this film progressed, I don't mean to give anything away, but, you know, it's cool how they did it. They basically, you know, as he entered Oz and more color started coming in, the screen started getting wider and until basically it got full screen, you know, the wide format like we're used to now in theaters. So that was really interesting the way they did that. Overall, it's a great movie. James Franco really did a great job. I was really interested in seeing how he would portray the wizard. You know, mainly I thought, you know, he did bring a little bit of comedy to it. But overall, he was a great wizard. I think he was, you know, a little bit sporadic and, you know, kind of like, you know, you think a wizard would be. But he was, you know, he also brought some comedy. He had some serious sides too, and I think he did a great job at it. Mila Kunis, another one. She did a fantastic job as the Wicked Witch. You kind of get to catch her what it was like before. You know, seeing her as the witch that you see in the old, basically, Wizard of Oz. So that's interesting because it kind of gives a backstory to it. It was definitely interesting seeing how the transformation began, like how it all happened and what caused the transformation to happen to that. And I don't want to give anything away about how or why that happened. You guys will just have to go see the movie. But she did a fantastic job. Overall, I think Sam Raimi did a great job with the movie. Everything was fantastic. The music was amazing. Everything was fantastic. But I would definitely recommend going to see it. I'm very glad that I saw it. I'd throw it out there. I'd give it a solid 8 out of 10. But yeah, definitely a movie worth seeing, guys.
The one thing that I would disagree with Matt, and you're definitely gonna agree with me, and we just talked about this a lot, is Mila Kunis is not very good. And I know Matt kind of enjoyed it. I think he just had a lot of fun with everything in this movie, but I could not get over the fact that they were terrible. It was really bad.
Yeah. And to be honest, I've never been a fan of Oz on film. I read the books as a kid and absolutely loved them. There's like 12 or 14 books in the series, and I went through a lot of those as a kid. Just to see, like, I know Matt walked away, you know, absolutely loving it. I turned to him, like, when we're done, we're sitting in the theater, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, that was fantastic." And I'm like,
"You really
did we just
like
watch the same movie here?" And I mean, I was more middle of the road compared to, I know Nate Nate hated it. I'm sure he'll have something to say next week about it. But yeah, I mean, I just, for me, all the things he enjoyed were the things that actually I got distracted by or lost in throughout the film.
Yeah. I know Nate told me that his favorite part of this whole movie was the Iron Man 3 trailer at the beginning.
Which, more and more I think about the film, I might be agreeing with him there. But sure. I did love the black and white sequences. I really did at the beginning.
I overall, I didn't mind it as much. I think outside of the bad performances, I mean, it was okay. Like, I didn't hate it the rest of the film, but I also didn't love it either. I thought it was fine. I think, you know, for if you're looking for something that's kind of middle of the road and very, you know, if you're not looking for anything great necessarily, you're going to like this film outside of the bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're looking for what more of a modern Disney live action hybrid kind of film has been, this is exactly it. Disney has not shown the highest caliber of live action films in the past decade or so. They've pushed, I know, so much more into their straight animated films, and they've really churned them out well, especially Pixar, and not just Pixar, but with recent, like, Wreck-It Ralph.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. And so, I mean, just really proving, hey, this company can do this. Well, with live action, they're still mediocre.
Yeah. And it, that's something, a trend that they're really going forward with, it looks like, for these next several years. As, you know, we've talked about, they did Alice in Wonderland. Now they did this, you know, Oz the Great and Powerful, and it's been announced that they're doing a new Cinderella movie.
Live action?
Live action. So, and which is up on our website right now. We kind of talked about it. The leading role for that right now is Emma Watson, who's looking to be the new Cinderella. So it looks like that's the trend they're going with, is doing, you know, obviously they're going to continue doing the animated stuff. That's what they're really good at. But they're also starting to do a lot more live action with their, with a lot of these films. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if that's the trend they continue with and if they make money with it. But like you said, so far, most of these films have been very mediocre.
Yeah, and I just want to point out Tron 2 is the exception because it was awesome.
I did enjoy Tron 2 a lot, quite a bit too. And now with Disney buying the rights to Star Wars, we're hoping for great live-action films with those also.
We hope we will.
We'll move on from Oz the Great and Powerful. The last thing that I'll say about it is make sure you go read the review up on the website at incessionfilm.com. Matthew did a really great job with it, giving an overall grade of a B-. And for the most part, I agree. I do think the script was a little bit better than what he thought in there. It was okay. But for the most part, I'm pretty right aligned with that. I think Nate would give it an F.
Yeah.
And Matt Lee, I think, was on the other side of that. He'd probably give like an A-. So, yeah, it was very, very different. But we're going to move on. The next thing that we are going to be talking about is there was a story that came out earlier this week that we, again, put up on our website that you can read at incessionfilm.com. But Sam Mendes, who directed the last Bond film, is not going to be doing any more Bond films. And I know you really enjoyed this last one. So, first of all, before we get into the segment, what are your thoughts on him not doing another Bond movie?
I'm crying right now because Sam Mendes utterly revived Bond. With the casting of Daniel Craig back in 2006, it was the absolute right move, but it just wasn't in the right hands with, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name, the director of Casino Royale. He made a competent film that was really more of a character study than a plot-driven film, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. And then you got Quantum of Solace, which unfortunately swung the other way and was so unconcerned with character and interactions. It was all about the action that it also lost a lot of potential because of that. And yet I still loved it though. And then you had Skyfall, which utterly encompassed everything that I think Ian Fleming ever wanted into the Bond character, where it's, okay, here's this guy who's actually this really complex, multifaceted character. And with his interactions with the other agents, with his ladies, with the villains, I mean, as well as immensely engaging action that's not over the top and not too subtle either, that a lot of other Bond films could fall in. Plus, it has the score, it has the look. I mean, there was, to me, it was, for me, it was hard to find a fault in it. So I love, because it was like Sam Mendes' hand was on this, and he knew exactly what he was doing. So I'm very disappointed to hear he's not coming
and
back.
I agree with you. It might be my favorite Bond film of all time. And everything that you just said pretty much encompasses how I feel about it. I mean, it was very well done and is really great. So it's a little disappointing to see him not going to be coming back. He basically, in an interview with Empire this last week, he basically said he had other theater commitments and live production type stuff that he over in the next year or so that he's going to have to put his time to. So so unfortunately, he will not be be coming back. So so it kind of brought up the question that we wanted to talk about, which was who is going to be our favorites to maybe direct the next Bond. So that's what we wanted to talk about. So Matthew, I wanted to ask you, who do you think might be the next director, or at least who would you like to see? It doesn't necessarily have to be who you think will do it, but who would you like to see direct the next Bond movie?
This is never gonna happen, but I'd love to see Nolan put his hand to it. Just because
he's on my list too.
May be my favorite director of the recent era of film. He's proved he can make not only competent action films but really insightful dramas and character studies too. And I'd love to see, I mean, it would be a Bond film no one has ever seen before. And yet, I really think he might be able to do it. The other director that popped to mind was Darren Aronofsky. Darren Aronofsky was originally slated to direct the X-Men films, like the Wolverine film, I believe.
Yeah.
And he was never one like I immediately would have sprung to as an action kind of movie director. But when I heard that, I thought, oh, I think he could do a really deft hand of that, because he has such a knack for production design for a film.
Yeah.
And just really has a great handle on it, as well as in a lot of those films that he does, they're not action films, but there's so much going on in them that he could actually kind of bring it all together as a whole and not let anything get lost in there. So I would love to see Aronofsky as another one. And now those are just the art house ones where I have a feeling they might be leaning. I mean, the fact they chose Sam Mendes was surprising to me. I love that they did, because he does have a more, Oscar tread rather than box office clout. But I don't know. I wonder if they might even lean towards someone like Paul Greengrass, who did the Bourne films. Yeah. I mean, he is a veteran in action films and has really proved himself. Not one of my favorites, but he's proved himself.
I did have Nolan on my list too. I mean, who wouldn't want to see him take over that franchise? I thought everything that you said would be awesome. Two more that is on my list that I would kind of like to see. I have no idea if they have any chance at this or not, but would be Matthew Vaughn, who directed Kick-Ass, and he also directed X-Men First Class, two movies that I really enjoy quite a bit. So I think he would be a great fit for this franchise, especially with the action sequences he's already done. He's done some CGI. So, I think he's got great experience. Everything that he has done lately, I've really enjoyed quite a bit. So I'd really like to see him in that role. Another one that I have that you may or may not have heard of is Shane Black, and he hasn't directed a ton of stuff, but he directed a movie, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was a really great film, and I really enjoyed that one quite a bit, and hasn't come out yet, but we are super, super excited for this film coming out soon, and that's Iron Man 3. He directed that movie, and based off of everything that we've seen, I think that film is going to be fantastic. So I'm really excited for it. So I'd kind of like to maybe see him have a crack at it. So,
well, JD, I was going to steal your thunder, but there was no thunder to steal. I was going to say Michael Bay.
it was really funny when I was thinking about this. I was talking with my fiance about it, and she brought that up. She said, what about Michael Bay? You know, you really love Transformers and all that. And I'm like, man, live, I love Michael Bay, but only within the realm of Transformers and the Bad Boys series. But
just imagine how cool the gadgets would be in Bond, though, if we had Michael Bay directing it.
It would very different Bond film. There would be explosions everywhere, and who knows, giant robots that he'd be using as gadgets.
See? Exactly. So, one last thought. Catherine Bigelow is someone I would love to see direct a Bond film. One, it would be the first female director of a Bond movie, which would be pretty epic to see how you know, a female might think in the realm of
sure.
Bond. Plus, she has proven herself to be an immensely competent action film director with Point Break in the 90s, and then more recently with The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. And, I mean, she... she can balance action and character and story and everything super well. So I'd love to see her throw her hat in the ring.
Yeah, that's a really good one, especially with her recent success with her last couple of films. It would be I think it would be a great nod for her to get that role. I think it would be awesome for the Bond franchise to be able to go that direction and see how it turns out. And it's Catherine Bigelow. You know she's going to do a good job.
Yeah, I just wonder what would happen to all the misogynistic puns, though.
Yeah, that's good. One last one before we move on. I know that was supposed to be our last one. But I had kind of written it down with a question mark, so I kind of want to know what your thoughts would be. This movie didn't necessarily do... I think it was kind of up in the air with some people. I particularly liked it, but Len Wiseman, who did Live Free or Die Hard, I enjoyed that movie, but what do you think on that one?
I don't know enough about him beyond Live Free and Die Hard.
I based him on this list. That's why I put a question mark, because I based it only on that film.
Okay, so if I'm going only on that film, maybe, but that's kind of like... It's like if you're going to compare Live Free or Die Hard to Die Hard, I want my Bond film to be the quality of Die Hard, not Live Free or Die Hard.
Sure.
Because sure, Live Free and Die Hard is a fun movie. It's a great action movie, a great summer blockbuster, but it doesn't have the lasting effect that the original Die Hard had. And I would love to see a Bond film like something like Skyfall that has that lasting impression. So I'm going to just kind of say, I don't know yet.
Yeah, and I mean, with the kind of success of Skyfall, I mean, it's going to be hard to kind of top what Sam Mendes did in this last film anyway. So it'll be a tough job regardless, but we'll see what happens. Before we move on, I'm going to stop and say thank you to Phoenix Blue Marketing and Advertising for sponsoring this podcast. As always, be sure to check them out online at phoenixblue.com. Also follow them on Twitter at @PHX_blue. Also check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/PHXblue. And they are also on Pinterest. They've actually been doing a lot of fun Pinterest stuff lately. You can follow them at pinterest.com/PHXblue also. So thanks to them for everything. We're going to talk about some news now that kind of came out this week. And I've been excited to talk about this all week, and we've kind of mentioned it already, but the first thing we're going to talk about is this new Iron Man 3 trailer. And if you haven't seen it, you need to pause this podcast and go watch it and then come back.
Do it now.
So we'll wait a second. Go pause it and then come back if you haven't seen it, because this trailer is amazing. It shows a lot of new things. So there's a lot of new developments that you see. You really start to see how serious of a tone this movie is going to have.
It's dark.
It's very dark. It's going to have a lot of new elements to it. And it looks like we're going to have more Iron Man 3 suits in this. So, Matthew, what did you think of this trailer?
I was kind of blown away. The original Iron Man was one I just went into kind of being... you know, it's a Marvel movie, I'll go watch it, and loved it. And then Iron Man 2 came out off of the high of the first one, and I still walked away loving it. Not as much as the first, but still really liked it. And then with this trailer, like, it's like my hopes are even higher for this third one, even after the kind of slightly lower, but not much, quality of the second one. I love that it looks like it's really developing. Robert Downey Jr., what's his name? Tony Stark's relationship with Pepper. So much more in this this one,
yeah.
and really seeing them torn apart, and like it looks like so much is legitimately on the line with the character, the Mandarin. Like, I was not so sure. I love Ben Kingsley. He's an awesome actor, but kind of like, really, are you gonna play a villain in, you know, a comic book movie? And then when I saw more of him, thinking, actually, I think he's perfectly cast for the Mandarin here.
He looks like he could be pretty good in
this. Because it's just like, there's so much like gravitas that goes along with that character from what I can see. I'm really excited.
It's like the opposite of him playing Gandhi.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And that's awesome. That just shows how versatile he is as an actor. Gosh, man, that's awesome. I think one of my favorite shots, and I don't remember if it was exactly in this one, but kind of just still talking about Iron Man 3, though, was when he's dragging his suit through the snow. I mean,
yeah, like in the back in the teaser trailer.
Yeah, because to me, it's like that's just what helps set that tone. But then there is this, like, sure, it's going to be dark, but I love in the new trailer because Iron Man, you know, he calls out all of these other suits. And if you thought there was a lot in number two, number three is going to blow that away.
Yeah, it's going to, I feel like the ending to this is going to be incredibly.
It's
going to
be like Michael Bay-esque at this point, or, you know, almost like Michael Bay guest directed the climax or something.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to see how Robert Downey Jr. takes Tony Stark in this, because it seems like it's going to be way different than the first two. And even in the Avengers, where he's still serious, but also very clever and very, you know, comedic all at the same time. And by watching this trailer after like the first 30 seconds, I mean, all that seems to go away, and it's him about revenge. It's him being very serious. It's him taking things to the next level. And I mean, you almost get like almost like an intimidation factor. Like he's done playing around. He's done being the comedic guy.
The film that came to mind when I was watching the trailer for Iron Man 3 was License to Kill, actually, the Bond film. That is my favorite, besides Skyfall, my favorite Bond film, because it's where Bond gets personal. And I love that idea. And that feels like exactly what this the new Iron Man is doing with Stark. Here it's because something really got personal, and you're getting to see more of the character of Tony Stark, not just Iron Man, which is part of what I loved about number one. Was you got to know him more,
the man, a little
and
bit
so
more.
I'm excited about seeing more of that character development.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see how this really plays out. You know, Don Cheadle also coming back to play James Rhodes, so we're gonna be able to see more of War Machine in this movie, as well as some other sidekicks that we're not really sure. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. The music seems like it's going to be really good based off of the trailer. So, I mean, there's not everything about this movie is making me get excited for this. So it should be really fun. So I think right now it's set to come out May 3rd, but I heard something this week that it might come out earlier, like in April, so like maybe by a week or something like that. So I don't know if that's true. I just kind of randomly came across that. So, and as I mentioned earlier, it's directed by Shane Black. So this is really outside of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Like, this is his next big thing. So I'm really rooting and cheering him on for that one. So the next piece of news we want to talk about is this week, After Earth also came out with a new trailer, and this is one that I thought Nate really did it best when he put the trailer up on the website, and he put it with the description of, "This is an M. Night Shyamalan movie. Get excited at your own risk," which I thought was really good and very true. So, Matthew, what did you think of the new trailer for After Earth?
Well, first let me address the original trailer for it, because I really, utterly was not a fan of the original trailer. It reminded me of like 10,000 BC in space.
Yeah, that's a great
was kind of what analogy. It looked like. And I just thought, I don't know, maybe, like, I typically trust Will Smith in movies. He's made some poor choices, but, you know, he's an actor I really like. So I thought, well, you know, it's a movie I'll probably end up seeing. Then I saw this trailer and my mind started changing. I love that it doesn't just seem to be an action movie. Like, there actually is what looks like partly father-son drama in this, which I'm kind of excited about. Some of the creatures, I thought it was just like mutatedly huge, normal animals on Earth now. And then seeing, like, actually some of the creatures look like they're like almost alien species that have somehow made it to Earth. So it's more intriguing than it was originally to me, because I'm like, oh, there's more going on here than I thought there was. And the other thing that, honestly, it's the most annoying aspect and yet the most interesting aspect to me of the entire trailer is Will Smith's speech pattern in the film. In this trailer, he speaks so oddly. I can't really describe it, I'm sorry to say, so go ahead and watch the trailer for yourself. But it's super punctuated, very determined, and very not like any Will Smith performance I've ever heard.
Which makes me wonder if that's in direction and not necessarily a character thing. Because you're right, it is very different than everything else he's done. And obviously we don't know, but it kind of makes me wonder either the tone of this movie is really, really serious, or I'm not sure what M. Night's trying to pull. It just seems very un-Will Smith-like.
Yeah, let me put it this way. I know it is a purposeful choice on the part of the filmmakers. However, I'm just kind of curious as to why or what. Yeah. Like, if this actually serves a purpose, or is this just to make this, you know, stand out?
And we're also looking at it from the context of it's just a trailer.
Exactly.
The rest of the film could be Will Smith as Will Smith, you know, and as his typical type stuff. A trailer that kind of comes to mind a little bit was some of the first Hancock trailers was sort of like that. Like, you kind of got
misleading,
a combination.
Actually.
Yeah. So it was like, even though he had a lot of, you know, there were some comedic elements to it, it kind of brought a lot of action drama type stuff to that. So kind of reminded me of that. And it's just, with the marketing of this film, it is very much what you were just saying. It just seems like he's got this weird tone and he's talking not like you would want Will Smith to talk in a movie. So what did you think about the performance, obviously based on the trailer, of Jaden, his son, who is a main character in this film?
My gosh, I just realized that was his son. He got big.
He did.
Yeah, Jaden last Smith. Time I saw him, he was about 3 feet tall. I don't know yet. He looks like he could be promising, or he looks like he could just be really stilted. I'm really kind of torn right now. There wasn't enough that I felt I saw or heard of him in the trailer to make a judgment on that.
Yeah, I'm trying to be hopeful about it. Based off of his performance in the trailer, I'm not too excited about his character. And, you know, based off of the trailers, it looks like he's kind of off by himself through most of the film, as he's dealing with these kind of weird animal creatures, as you were talking about before, that seem to not be from Earth but somehow made it here. I guess kind of like in that new Kia commercial where they just kind of come from outer space. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm not really too excited for this movie altogether. I'd say on a scale from 1 to 10, my excitement level is more like a 3. I do love Will Smith, and that keeps me a little bit hopeful, but I am not very excited for M. Night Shyamalan as the director. Everything he's done lately has really turned me off, and I haven't really enjoyed it. And I was really excited for The Last Airbender. I really loved the cartoon, and it was something I really looked forward to. The marketing made me excited for it, and he completely bombed that and really disappointed me. So it's hard for me to get excited for anything he does anymore.
Yeah, I've not outright liked an M. Night Shyamalan film, at least one directed by him, since 2004's The Village. And it seems like when M. Night goes for fantasy rather than horror approach, which is not exactly true, but he went for fantasy in Lady in the Water, and it just meandered all over the place really work.
Yeah, his fantasy stuff has been bad.
And then Last Airbender, I didn't see, but I know the general consensus is it's a WTF.
It's bad.
Yeah. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm surprised a studio threw money at him to make After Earth, because he's really not been able to prove himself in the realm of fantasy. And yet he has a better track record in horror. It's not the best, but he has a much better track record there. So I'm wondering if maybe this is a film that gets to combine some horror elements, because it does look like it's possible from a couple of the sequences in the film. So maybe he does really get to draw on some of more of his areas of expertise.
And it looks like, based off of the trailer, that it could have some of that. Like I was saying, it has some sort of this serious, possibly dark tone, but it's obviously a sci-fi movie. And I mean, if you stuck to scripts that are like The Village or Signs, things like that, The Sixth Sense, obviously a really great film. But yeah, I mean, everything that he does, especially sci-fi wise, is, you know, it's been bad. So not really looking forward to that film at all, but it's Will Smith, so I'm kind of rooting him on, and I'm hoping that it turns out okay. So we shall see. The last piece of news that, or no, actually we have two more things we're going to talk about, is earlier this week, George Lucas came out and said that the original Star Wars cast is most likely going to be coming back, which is going to be pretty exciting. So he was in an interview with Business Week, and he quote, this is the quote he had, quote, "We had already signed Mark and Carrie and Harrison, or we were pretty much in the final stages of negotiation." And then he went on to say, "Maybe I'm not supposed to say that. I think they want to announce that with some big whoop-de-doo, but we were negotiating with them," end quote. So he basically said that Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, and Harrison Ford are more or less signed on for the new Star Wars. So, Matthew, what do you think about that?
I'm excited, but they're old. And that's not, I don't mean that as like a bad thing, but
The originals came out a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would love to see a kind of a whole breaking off and doing a new thing, like if they're going to do this, because you did have, with episodes 1, 2, and 3, you still had Lucas involved. Yeah. You still had Frank Oz as Yoda. You still had James Earl Jones as Darth Vader. So, and John Williams still doing the score. So, I mean, there was still so much borrowing from the original three films. This feels like a real place to do a clean break from the old films and just say, J.J. Abrams, just say, here's my version. You know, here's what I want to be doing with the Star Wars films. Yeah. And he is the, I couldn't honestly think of a better person to be handling them than him.
Sure.
Because he will treat them so well. And, but just to kind of see, like, okay, you're casting them. And now it almost feels a little jokey to me. It was kind of like, I wondered in the Star Trek movie, like, if they were going to put the original cast in. Well, the only one they do is Nimoy. And Nimoy has enough clout of his own of being a very respected actor and documentary host outside of the realm of Star Trek, that it didn't feel jokey. It actually, it really served the plot and the film well as a whole. It feels like with that kind of casting, it's like, so who are they going to be? Just like, I mean, they're going to be themselves, but they're just these older characters.
Yeah.
Just kind of, I don't know. I want to see a clean break. I don't want to see them in there, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I kind of wonder if it's just going to be something where they come into the film and they are old in the film, and it's they're like small roles as a bigger role, and a new script starts to kind of come together. Because obviously there's going to have to be new characters in this, or at least I'm hoping so. We're hoping that they do something new and fresh with it. I mean, that's kind of what we talked about last week when we were talking about John Williams may or may not be coming back to do the score, or is it going to be Michael Giacchino or whatever. But we're kind of hoping that, you know, it's going to be something new and fresh. But based off of what Lucas is saying here is that they're in the final stages of negotiations, and they might do this whole big quote-unquote whoop-de-doo to announce it or whatever. And it kind of makes me think they're going to have a big role in the films. And I mean, what can they possibly do? I mean, their Harrison Ford's got to be like 70 by now. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. It's, I mean, they can't have that big of a role, you would think.
Well, Solo can't shoot first anymore is all I got to say.
Yeah. So, we'll see. There's going to be a lot of Star Wars news that'll be coming out in the next little bit. So you can definitely be on the lookout for that. The last piece of news that we wanted to go over with, which I was kind of stunned to hear about this, but it turns out that it is actually going to happen, and there is a Super Trooper sequel that is in the works.
Right now?
Right now, there is a Super Trooper sequel, and you heard me right. Like, I'm not making that up. Like, they actually said it's coming out. So, Broken Lizard, who did the original one, one of the guys from that, his name is Kevin Heffernan, who played Farva in the original Super Troopers, came out.
Farva.
I just want a large Farva. Basically said that that the script has been given to Fox and that they're in negotiations for a time and place to shoot later this year. So, Matthew, what do you think? Should they do this, or what are they doing here?
I am absolutely excited for this. I've been a big fan of most of the Broken Lizard films, especially Super Troopers. I did also really enjoy Beerfest and the Slammin' Salmon. I guess my biggest question with this, because there is so much unknown and up in the air, is all of Broken Lizard in on this? Because the one they've not made a film fully together since 2009, so I mean that's been 4 years.
Yeah,
and it'll be at least 5 before this film comes out. And say, okay, well, I hope these guys are all still together and going to make it. Because what resulted when it was just two of them, I think it was just Jay Chandrasekhar and maybe it was just him actually on his own doing. The Dukes of Hazzard, and there was nothing wrong with it. It just lost the feeling of the Broken Lizard films, yeah. Where all 5 of those guys can play so well off of each other to just create this this comedic realm that I don't know of any other comedy troupe that's been able to create the same brand of off the wall, dirty humor that still somehow has a heart, and you actually care about these guys. Like, I never would have imagined that being possible. But sure. But yeah, I'm super excited to see it happen. I mean, Super Troopers totally deserves a sequel. So I'm excited to see where it's going to go from here.
I did love the original one. I thought it was great. The main thing with this one is I'm not exactly sure if how it's going to do, as you know, the main target audience from this film is now a lot older and a different place in life than they were back then. I don't know if we'll be able to catch the same audience that it did, with it being such a big gap, as the first one came out in 2001. And by the time it was released, it'll probably be 2014, assuming that there's no delays and that it goes according to plan. So I'm not exactly sure if it'll catch on. And like you're saying, it's been so long since they've done something together that a lot of people have kind of moved on from these guys and have moved on to other things. And there's lots of new developments out there with other different franchises that are getting pretty excited. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I know personally I'm excited for it, kind of like you. I loved the first one, and I did enjoy Beerfest as well.
Beerfest was amazing.
Which was great. So I do think they have it in them, and I almost kind of wonder if they're running out of material, and maybe that's why they're coming back to do the sequel of this one. I don't know. That's also another interesting point.
Well, this may not be right, but I don't even remember the Slammin' Salmon hit in theaters. If it did, it was a really limited run. I remember I saw it like, oh, wait, this is Broken Lizard. It's not straight to DVD, I'm guessing. Okay, this is weird. But I think Super Troopers 2 would have a following, because I mean the original film has a cult following. It really does. So I mean, it's a film that it's not going to have a huge budget. Would it make its budget back? More than likely, yes. Will it be a big hit? No. I mean, you look at something like Anchorman 2, That's coming out, and that's around the same timeline of when it originally came out, yeah. And now with the new it's one coming true. Out. But Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd and Steve Carell have all maintained kind of their status in the film industry.
Yeah.
And then you look at, okay, well, no one even knows the names of the guys in Broken Lizard. I could probably name two of them. That's
yeah.
it.
I bet most people would hardly know any of the names. They
exactly.
might recognize some of the faces.
They just know the movies. So I think you make a real good point there that it really might not be as well received because the audience that originally had might be gone and everyone else, like the younger generation, is going to be, well, who's this?
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So one last piece of news that I wanted to just mention real fast is that one movie that we have talked about here a lot at In Session Film that we're really looking forward to is Oblivion. And that movie is being scored by M83, which is a band that we all like quite a bit. And they released this last week. They released their first track from the score of that film called Star Waves. And it is phenomenal. It's up on our website. You can go listen to it right now. And it is really, really good. It is very much M83 kind of style. The score is going to, I think the score for this film is could be one of my favorites ever if it continues on the track based off of this first track that they released. So I'm really excited for it. The tones and everything is very much from the trailer. It sounds really great. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So go check it out. I just wanted to throw that out there briefly because it's something close to my heart. So the last thing that we are going to do is talk about movies we've seen this week. So outside of Oz, which we've already talked about, what else have you seen this week?
This is embarrassing. I only watched one other movie this week, and it was not another teen movie.
Nice.
I found it on Netflix and thought, I've not seen this since I was like probably 16. Nice. I felt really old because it came out in 2001 or two, and I thought, dang, these are referencing movies from the 90s, which was more than 10 years ago. Oh my gosh. Wow.
We're old now.
Yeah, it had been a while since I'd seen it. I'd kind of forgotten how unashamed that film is in its type of humor. But also, I realized how much I really laugh and actually what a smart film it really is in so many ways with just little things like the cafeteria being called the Michael Dining Hall for Anthony and Michael Hall, and I'm getting the names all messed up here, who was starred in The Breakfast Club, or just so many ridiculous caricature parodies of like She's All That, Can't Hardly Wait, and then like the 80s classics like Breakfast Club, sure. Pretty in Pink. American Pie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in so long.
It was a trip down memory lane and just a trip in general getting to watch it. So it was a fun nonsense watch, but I do recommend the film. It's actually really funny.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't seen that one in so long. that's a fun one, though. Now it's on Netflix. I might have to check it out. So, when I watched, it was a pretty slow week for me too. I mean, obviously, I saw Oz, which we talked about at the beginning. Another film that I watched this week was one that we talked about a little bit last week, since Nate recommended it. Is a movie called Compliance, which is written and directed by Craig Sobel. And it's based off of a true story. I won't go into it a ton since we talked about it last week on the podcast, but basically it's about a prank caller who calls this fast food restaurant and convinces the manager to interrogate an innocent young employee, this girl. And they basically do a lot of terrible stuff to her, and the caller basically pretends to be a police officer and calls in and basically tricks the manager and some of the other employees to do some pretty bad stuff. So, and it's based off of a true story. And what one thing I noticed about it that we didn't talk about last week is if you go read this, the actual story, whether it be you know, somewhere online or Wikipedia or whatever, the script almost feels like it was stolen from Wikipedia. Like they took the plot summary or basically the what actually happened, the real events, and then threw it in there and it stuck directly to it. The only thing that wasn't real is it happened in a McDonald's in real life and it's a fake restaurant in the movie. And outside of that, I mean, it's very close to, you know, reportedly what happened anyway. But it's pretty good. It's very uncomfortable to watch. It's, you know, there's not really a good guy in this movie. You feel really bad for, the girl that this happens to, and which her name is Becky in the movie. And the things they do to her, is just, it's really uncalled for. It's very, gross. And even though the restaurant manager and some of the other people involved, you know, even though they were sort of victims to this, at some point they lose all touch of reality, as at some point you would realize that, hey, this is not a real police officer. And this goes on for a really long time. And after, you know, 30 minutes of this, you would you'd think that they would just go to the police station, which was only 3 blocks away in real life. And this actually happened in Kentucky, by the way. So it was very hard to watch, but it's a very good movie. I'd still recommend it. The movie is called Compliance. Another movie I watched this week is a movie called Ginger and Rosa, which is written and directed by Sally Potter. And it stars Alice Englert and Ellie Fanning as Ginger and Rosa. I thought the performances in this movie were really good. I thought they really played off this teen friendship really well. I thought they did a really great job. It's about this movie of these two girls, and they're really inseparable, and it's set in the 1960s in London. And it's just really the story of their relationship, and there's a situation that happens that essentially kind of destroys it. But at the end, it kind of brings it all back together, and it's really just a movie about, in the end, the theme is really about forgiveness, which I thought was kind of neat. So
yeah, that's one I've actually been wanting to see. So after your recommendation, I think I'd like to watch it.
Yeah.
Actually,
I thought it was pretty good. I don't think it necessarily did well with critics necessarily, but, I thought it was really well done. So I would definitely recommend it to anybody out there. So, and then I watched a movie that I haven't seen in a long time since it came out, and I watched No Country for Old Men.
Nice.
As I bought that on DVD, so I threw that in, which was really good. And I almost forgot about the ending and just kind of how crazy that was. It was such a good ending and sort of crazy and unexpected and different.
And then I woke up.
And then I woke up. So it was is a good movie, though. I really enjoyed it quite a bit, so I forgot how good it really was. So, and then I also, my fiance bought me Wreck-It Ralph on DVD this week, so I threw that in and watched it one more time with my family, who was in town this week. So that movie got screwed out of an Oscar, I'm just telling you.
I like Brave, but Wreck-It Ralph was pretty awesome.
It was kind of funny. I was catching up on some of the Colbert Report and the Daily Show, because that's the only way I can watch the news. And I was watching an old episode where it was the day after the Oscars, and Stephen Colbert was going off about a bunch of things, and being very comedic. The last thing he said before he moved on to the next segment is he looks very seriously into the camera and goes, "Wreck-It Ralph got screwed," and then he moved on, which I enjoyed quite a bit because I wholeheartedly agreed. So, but anyway, that's all that I watched this week. So, Matthew, before we get out of here, do you have any other thoughts or newsy stuff or movies you're excited for coming out this week?
I'm not really all that up to date. I'm working a lot. And I'm not really all that up to date on what's all coming out pretty soon. But, summer season is going to be coming up pretty soon. So I am actually fairly excited to see all the awesome things that summer has to hold. I mean, summer is the most awesome time for movies, that or Oscar season. I'm looking right now within the next few weeks. There's nothing I'm psyched about. I'll probably go see the new G.I. Joe and some of this stuff, but I don't think there's one movie I am absolutely just hyped up for it, except Oblivion, which does not come out all the way until April 12th.
You're telling me that you're not excited for the incredible Burt Wonderstone that's coming out?
Yeah, I like Steve Carell, but I don't know what's going on there. I've not even watched a trailer yet.
We'll see. Yeah, it's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Olympus Has Fallen comes out the week after next. That one I actually really do want to see.
Yeah, that comes out really good. There's another movie that comes out next week that I'm also excited for, Dead Man Down, which has Colin Farrell in it, I believe. I'm really excited for that one. I think that one looks pretty good. I think that's a limited release film, though, so... Not sure if I'll get a chance to see it in theaters or not, but it's one that I'm really looking forward to. We will have a podcast review of Olympus Has Fallen in the next couple weeks, too, when that comes out. So that should be pretty fun. Another heavily marketed movie right now that also comes out that weekend is Admission. That's that Tina Fey and Paul Rudd movie that's coming out. So,
and the Croods, too.
Yes. So a lot of fun stuff here coming up in the next weeks. So stay tuned for that, and we'll have a lot more new stuff coming out on the website this week. Be sure to check us out on Facebook. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/InSessionFilm. We're also on Twitter at InSessionFilm, so be sure to follow us. We tweet and Facebook everything that comes from our website and some other stuff, and we'll probably have some other Facebook contests and stuff coming up here in the near future as well. So any last thoughts before we get out of here, Matthew?
No, that's it. Sayonara, sports fans.
And so that is it from me. So for Matthew Mason, I'm JD Duran with In Session Film. Next week Nate should be back with us, so, and maybe even Matt Lee. So till then, everyone have a great week, and we'll see you next week.